Well, come, Peter and Melinda, join me here at this conversation table today as we want to hear from you. You're joining us in our summer of stories, And so I have some water here, too, for you if you need during our time here. Well, Peter and Melinda are from Medicine Hat, Alberta, so a little bit to the south of us. I'm not sure if you've ever been there, but it is a wonderful place where there truly is a hat. I mean, it looks like a hat. But anyway, we're so happy to. Can we give them a warm welcome here today?
Thank you. Thank you.
Well, Peter and Melinda, to get started, just tell us a little bit about who you are as we get started here.
I'm a mom and a grandma. We have four children and six grandchildren. I have been a nurse, a palliative nurse. I am a death doula, so I help people be comfortable at the end of their life. I'm a solution finder and a lifelong learner.
She also has a reputation as being the Iron Lady.
Yes.
So she helps to manage my life. I am a farmer, a mechanic, a jack of all trades, a master probably of none. But I seem to be pretty good at quite a few. Some people think that I'm just absolutely magical. I've done a diversity of things, including pastoring for about 8 years, and we got involved in missions earlier on. I can remember earlier pictures that I had about going and being in Africa, old dark Africa, and how kind of scary that would be. But I think it was David Livingstone said that until you've drunk the waters of Africa, you have not been satisfied, and you will not be satisfied until you continue to drink. But anyway,
wow.
We have done a little travel, a little bit of missions, have an interest in those kind of things. I'm sometimes a dad.
There you go. A very important job indeed.
It is.
Isn't it? Well, we got connected very interestingly. And so it's actually a pretty amazing connection that I received a phone call about a year and a half ago, about February of 2023, which to me was a little bit out of the blue, receiving a call. I think you left a message and I maybe called you back. That's how it went. And then receiving this call from Peter that potentially our church had given some money, and he was a little perplexed that where this money was coming from. To be honest, I was a little perplexed that where this money was coming from. I wasn't aware fully of what was going on, where this money was going. So Peter and Melinda, can you guys share a little bit of that moment for you guys and where you were at?
We were in the process of expanding the church in Sierra Leone, and we did not have funds to begin the expansion. We needed to tear out an old house and start to build an expansion to double the capacity of the church. And we had no resources, and we're praying about all this kind of stuff. And in this process, I was invited to a birthday party to listen to a guy that I never met before who had a story about God using him and making provision through people that he had no connection with. And in this process of looking for finances and seeing how God could possibly provide for us, I look on the website for the Great Commission Foundation, and there is $7,400 that came into my account for Sierra Leone from the Chinese Alliance Church. And it was just like the Father steering me my life along, steering with his finger, but he has steered Ryan and he's steered the rest of you guys to become involved with us in the most God way that it's imaginable for me to do. And Father just says, you know, look, you have no connection with people, but I can release finances to you through them. And it just wrecks me to know the Father like that, but it wrecks me to know you like that, because you have that kind of heart set, that kind of mindset to be involved. And so you have become an integral part. And then I got connected with Brandon because I thought, okay, well, because it requires a really deliberate act to send money to us on the website, somebody had to choose us.
Yeah.
and they had to know who we were or what we were mm-hmm. for that to happen. And for it to happen as it did was a miracle of God. It was remarkable. And Brandon, I wanted to make sure that this was not just a mistake. If it was a mistake, then I better send the money back, and no matter how much that would hurt me. But anyway, Brandon and I have been in conversation and relationship since that time, and it's been just really an amazing thing.
And what's hilarious is, I'm sure we were both just very confused on that phone call at first, but delighted in the Father, as you had mentioned, because it's a seeming mistake, but to the Father, there was no mistake at all.
That's exactly true.
Because we had given at one point to a ministry in Sierra Leone, and yours was chosen this time by the Father for us to give to, and we are delighted to be a part of this work through lovely Albertans reaching out to Sierra Leone.
It's incredible.
Wow.
It truly is.
Well, yeah, you can do that if you want. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, Melinda's on stage as well, so I'd love to hear a little bit before we release you to go sit down again. But you two, how did this connection happen with Sierra Leone and the church over there?
So my sister, Lorna Duick, from Huntley Street in Crossroads Communications, she is a great people connector. And she knew Sylvia Rempel in Calgary, who owns Sun Ice and owned Sowing Seeds International, or was the head of Sowing Seeds International. And they needed seamstresses to come along. My sister knew I was a sewer. She knew Sylvia needed people to come along with. And so I went. I thought, what a good opportunity. So and it's amazing when you get there. And the African ladies, they all line up, and you come up to the door, and they all are, you know, like dancing you into the building. So that was our entry into that location. And I learned how to sew with a treadle machine, which I'd never done before. And the reason that Peter got involved was because the first year I went alone, and there was a great need for somebody who could fix, just like Peter can fix anything. So the sewing machines that we got were from India, and they were very poorly aligned, you know, like they didn't sew nice straight seams, and they punched up. And so the second year, Peter came along to be the sewing machine mechanic. And so that's how we got to Sierra Leone.
And then it developed a little bit from there, but we want to be able to say, Melinda, we're so grateful to see how the Lord has been working in your life and to bring this incredible work that he's been journeying with you. And we just want to bless you today as you do that. Yeah. Thank you so much. So then let's jump into then your first visit, Peter, to Sierra Leone.
So in 2004, I got 2004. I was there for the first time, and I was going to be the mechanic and the light and the eyeglass adjuster and that kind of thing. And I got involved with putting a roof on a church. I became the general to do that. And they joke about that a little bit because I'm always, if I walk, I'm actually going someplace and I'm going to do something. And that was the beginning of our involvement. And I met these guys, Mustafa and Alphaeus. They were two of the chaplains here there in street clothes. And as you can see, they're huge guys. From the beginning, my desire was that I could somehow be involved in setting them free, teaching them how to fish, equipping them so that they could look after themselves. And that has been my goal over the last 19 years, and we're still in the process, and things continue to develop. And Mustafa, the guy on the right, that's Mustafa. He was a boy soldier, and so he was known to have a very tough reputation. He was a boy soldier at 14. And a Pentecostal pastor came along and said, Mustafa, I hear that you're a very wicked man. You need to come to my church. So he wound up there. And he also had a grandmother that was a believer. And she was evidently quite a lot like Melinda, the Iron Lady. You, bam! And he'd get disciplined to keep him in line of wherever he needed to do and be. And so Melinda, in looking after, say, finances and the the challenges of communication and the challenges of accounting and all those kind of things. If it's not right, and Melinda sends them an email, well, then Mustafa tells me that universally, the three of them, Mustafa, Jeremiah, and Alphaeus, they will get down on their faces and, oh, God, help me, Jesus, because somehow or another, they know they've screwed up. And Mama Melinda is drawing the line for them. And Mustafa tells me very, very often, oh, I love my mom. She's a real mom. I mean, she keeps us in line where you're supposed to do. So these are two of the guys here on the screen, Mustafa and Alphaeus. Alphaeus is also a pastor. They're all chaplains. They're all first soldiers. All of them know active duty. Mustafa just had an operation recently to remove some shrapnel that was really giving him a lot of trouble, but he's still carrying some shrapnel. If he was to go through the detectors, well, then he'd go off. So he knows what it's like to be at war and to face that kind of thing. So he was shot in the head, and the general, who is now the president of Sierra Leone, sent his personal entourage up to get him out of the front line to rescue him. And so he has the story of deliverance, the scars to show, and he is... there's some things that I just really love about the military, that you learn to obey, you learn to trust leadership, and you learn to act. And he is willing to do that. And it doesn't matter who it is. We had a leader of the chaplaincy, the Sierra Leone Army chaplaincy, who was both a Christian leader and a spiritist. And he used spiritism, witchcraft, to keep people under control. So you want to be careful about having the captain curse you, because that would not be good. And Mustafa just said, I will not. And Jeremiah was like that too. I will not. Anyway, so these guys were there to look after us and keep us out of trouble and keep us going forward. This is Jeremiah. Jeremiah on the left and Mustafa on the right in uniform. And they were really wonderful. And sometimes in their situation of extreme poverty, I think that they didn't quite tell the truth. Because when you have somebody come that you see as a great resource, if there is anything that you can do or say to get help, then that's what we say. And that was not necessarily good. But in this process, we have really grown. Like Mustafa calls me at least once a day, at least. And Jeremiah less frequency, Alphaeus a little less frequently. But those guys have all been in the process of my life. And we started out, first of all, well, then they need to go to seminary. And then we need operations. And my wife is going to die if I don't get a C-section. And the malaria and the disease goes on, and the stories go on. Something that really changed my life profoundly was there was a girl that was burned. She had a friend that she didn't bother telling me about. That friend had a fishbone in her hand or in her arm, and it became infected. In 2 days, she was dead. And that girl didn't think that I would have the capacity to be able to help her friend. This friend was too small a thing for me to be concerned about, but it would cost too much to look after her. Mm-hmm. For $5, I could have saved that woman's life. $5. Mm-hmm. And that has profoundly affected me, because I frequently get those kind of crisis calls, frequently. You know, if we don't get help today, we're not going to make it till tomorrow.
Yeah.
There's no medication, no hospitalization without finances ahead. And whether it's $5 or $100, sometimes it's $1,000 or whatever it is, we need it now. And so the question that comes to me, what am I going to do with that? You know, I mean, the need is endless. What can I do? And what I hear the Father say, this same Father that steers us along like that, and steers you along, whether you realize it or not, steering you along, he says, pay it. Like, what are you thinking? Pay it. And the result in my life has been that I'm coming to trust God more and more. You know what? He knows today from tomorrow. He knows the future. Mm-hmm. And the work in our hearts of being both generous and understanding and trusting him. It's all about trusting him and having a relationship with him.
Yeah.
And so those guys have really been, and they've gone through college, gone through seminary, taken courses. We've put kids through school. We've dressed them. We've provided for school packs. Mm-hmm. And now we've come to this stage where we've come through a building project. So we built a couple of houses. One of them the army already tore down illegally. Mm-hmm. And the stories just go on and on. But God is steering us along, and his kingdom is advancing.
Yeah, wow. We're hearing a lot about that, you know, the connection, these men who you've been connected to are helping to lead this church and the ministry there. And you're giving us hints of the context of Sierra Leone. And maybe you know a bit about Sierra Leone, whether it be from media or movies or what it might be. But could you paint a little picture for us of what is it like in Sierra Leone? If you could tell us what that might be like.
The first thing that happens when you open the door to the plane, you are just hit with a wave of heat and humidity. Whoa! Okay. And we're greeted by these military guys and we're steered around, and I'm very, very grateful, because when we went there in 203, 204, I get there in 204, then it's fresh from the war and things are very, very raw and a little bit volatile. So among the things that you see is the amputee camp, and the amputee camp was from the Jontas, or the rebel groups there. They would ambush or surprise a village, women, kids, guys, whatever, and they would just come in, bam, like that, and they'd grab women, grab kids, grab men, whoever, short sleeve, long sleeve. And if a short sleeve was your arm went up against a tree or log, you know, you just stretch you out, bam, like that, and the machete comes down and you're short sleeve. Bam, there you are, and you've got long sleeve. Same thing with legs. So when you have a camp there that's trying to look after amputees and you see them along with stumps of whatever kind, you know the story behind. No street lights, as in traffic lights. Mm-hmm. Power was very, very infrequent. Food is short. Disease is common, like malaria is a real problem. And it's actually deadly. It becomes deadly. What fascinated me, like Melinda experienced when she first came in, these people have had, quite literally, they've had a hell of a life. And just as an example, one of the ladies was telling the story. She comes in dancing along with all the rest of the entourage. And in the process, they have a chance to listen to stories. And the lady says, yeah, well, you know, I had this opportunity. I've got three or four kids. And all of a sudden, we are attacked. And the option was, I could kill the baby and save myself and the other two kids, and we would live. Or she could refuse to kill the baby and save herself.
Yeah. Wow.
So she had to kill her own baby right there, so that the other two kids and she herself could live to somehow survive with them. And the purpose of sowing seeds coming to Sierra Leone was so that they could have an opportunity to have a career. So these women would learn to sow so that they could stop selling themselves and sell products instead. So that was really tough. And I've been there a number of times to visit them, and things change progressively and advance a little bit. You could even find a hotel with a shower and a air conditioner sometimes. Some of the dishes are, the food dishes are less than wonderful, but there are some amazing dishes. They don't look that great. You can get your fingers in there along with them and everybody eating with their hands, you know.
Yep.
But those are some of the cultural things, but they have an excellent fish soup. And some of the rice and shrimp and stuff like that,
right,
with their green sauce on there that doesn't look that good. But man, I can just get right into it.
Wow, yeah. Wow. So we're seeing this, you know, this country that has gone through the worst and, yes. And really is in much pain and will be for years to come.
Yeah.
However, we have works like this church, yes. With Mustafa and with Jeremiah and mm-hmm. and coming in and you guys partnering together for this community. And the Lord is at work. The Father is at work. And you've told me, we've gone for a couple breakfasts now. And the stories that came out are just incredible. And so you have one here today queued up about healing of a blind woman. Would you be able to tell us this story?
Oh, man, I can tell you a story. So this woman, she's a Muslim lady, not associated with the church. Here's that there's healing happening at the church. These guys pray, like the church opens at 5:30 in the morning, and the people come to pray. And they're excited to pray because God is present with them. So this lady calls, and she'd like to have prayer. So Mustafa couldn't go as a pastor right away. He sent his precocious 13-year-old son, who at 13 or 12 is preaching to schools of 500 kids and telling them, you need to learn to obey your parents. Anyway, he sends him and two orphans from his home. He has like 7 or 8 orphans in his home from Ebola and goodness knows. Anyway, those are another story. But he sends this Esther and Juliana to this blind lady, and they should assess the situation. So they come back and tell Mustafa, yep, she's blind. She can't even see light. And Mustafa tells him, you go back there. You three go back there and you pray for her. The Lord's spirit is with you and my spirit will be with you and she will be healed. So they go back there and lay hands on her and pray for her and she is healed.
Wow.
And Mustafa comes there later on and the lady is crying. Let's see. Those are the three. Yeah. Peter, this is Peter number two. Peter number one only lived a little while. They name, there's a Melinda and a Peter and Jeremiah. He has a Peter and a Melinda. Alphaeus has a Melinda. And anyway, Julianne and the other one, Esther, they go. And Mustafa comes then later on to see. Yeah, it's a little difficult to see. That's the lady, the blind lady. Now, she... to me, she looks like she has serious issues yet that you can see physically. But she is currently saved, accepted Jesus, coming to the church.
Wow.
To me, that looks like an enormous goiter.
Wow.
But nonetheless, she received her healing, and Mustafa came to visit her, and she starts crying. She says, "What you crying about?" Oh, she says, Jesus did it for me. Jesus did it for me.
Wow.
So she's become part of the congregation.
Wow.
So you have people like that that are in severe need.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. And then you sent me this one as well about a cursed woman no more.
Yeah. That's in a nutshell, that's what it is. She came to the church. And she says, I'm going to die, because this thing about spiritism, Lungi, which is just across the bay and the place where you land with the international airport. The church, I think, is bigger than the international airport. But anyway, that is the spiritism center for Sierra Leone. And you have demonic activity that is very visible, dramatic, and powerful. So when they curse you, you have the medicine men curse you. You hear the stories from Africa. Yeah, the medicine men, yeah. Well, they don't have a defense against that kind of thing. Very many of them have no defense. And within 2 or 3 days, they are dead. Mm-hmm. And very often it appears to be that not only do they have these kind of things where the whole body breaks out in festering or running sores, but they have other things that show up as well. And the diaphragm is not, it appears that the diaphragm doesn't function anymore and you suffocate. But they die in a couple of days.
Hmm.
So this lady comes in and she is covered with running sores and she's sick and stinky, really stinky. Mustafa is telling me the story and he says she stinks really bad. And I said immediately, well, that is a sign of the demonic. Just that is demonic. And he says, you are so absolutely right. The widow women, which he has seven widow women in the church that he is trying to help, these widow women are stone breakers. So they have a hammer, you go to a stone yard, and you break granite, and that's what's mixed into the concrete, the hand-mixed concrete.
Right.
And that's how they try to make an earn a living for their kids and for themselves. And when it's really raining like it is now, then it's very, very difficult for them to work or to find a market. As a result, they can starve to death, literally. So they come to the church and look for any kind of help, but they come to Jesus, and this is part of the motivation for them to pray. And so this woman comes along, and she's going to die. And they weep and pray, and call out to God. See, you will not die. You are going to live. You will live and not die. You will live and not die. 2 days later, the scabs are coming off of her body because she's healed.
Wow.
2 days. And she can eat again, and she can function. And then there's the instruction about, hey, guys, you know, don't go back to that village where you came from. You need to have a changed life with Jesus. And so that's her process. Mm-hmm. And so their lives are changed, and that blind woman and this woman as well, they are fresh from a life of hell and sickness and oppression and coming to Jesus and coming to find him and being transformed. Because if you really meet Jesus, he changes your life.
Wow, yeah, and this is amazing, the work that's happening. These are two examples of the mighty work that's going on in the church here, and the church work is ongoing, as you'd mentioned before. So we have a shot of the church still in progress. Tell us a little bit more about this still in progress.
Oh, this is the way the church is now. And you can see there's no ceiling in there, and the rafters, those are no structures and so on. That is not Canadian structure. That is not Canadian architecture. So we are in the process of putting a PVC ceiling in there because it really helps for the heat, and it also helps for the sound. But through a long story, and you were the beginning, of this story of the transformation. This is the end, toward the ending of this building. This is the addition that was put on. And if you look, you can catch a little bit of the tiled floor, and there's so many stories that are attached with that as well. Mm. But there's the PVC ceiling that needs a few thousand dollars, perhaps. We're getting close to getting the PVC in there. But you can see that there's a considerable number of people, and they become one of the largest congregations in that area, and you have people that are coming from a considerable distance as well. But they are in a tough area. Lots of poverty, lots of Satanism, lots of spiritism, and lots of violence. So Mustafa, because he's a soldier, he can carry a piece.
Yeah.
And in this area here, despite the church being locked and having a dog and having a guard as well, thieves will break in one way or another, take the speakers off the wall that are in like 10 feet up, mounted into the wall with concrete, mounted into the concrete wall with steel stands, cages, and try to haul them out.
Wow.
And so we've had that occasion, and they got caught and dropped the speaker and ruined the speaker. But anyhow, stuff just gets stolen all the time. And the sabotage, the demonic involvement with people that you are not fully aware of where they are at. You can have somebody that you are entrusting, for instance, with a generator. Okay, you're going to fuel the generator. You're going to service the generator because power is not trustworthy. You have to have a generator.
Yeah.
And so what happened with us was that this guy deliberately left the oil cap off the engine, started the engine, so it appeared like things are okay. All of a sudden, you've got a fire in the engine. The engine is seized. The generator is spoiled. And those kinds of things are just happen. And so there's the need for wisdom and awareness. Mm-hmm. Oh, God, help us to be wise and to watch and to know who to trust and who not to trust, and all those kind of things. Wow. Lots of challenges.
Lots of challenges, and keeping that space where people gather. And you said it was doubling. And
this is doubled.
And it's unbelievable to hear.
It was full within a year.
Yes.
And the kids are sitting on the outside in rain and whatever else. Yeah. But now people are coming inside, so now we're short still. We're still short. We got another 100 chairs, I think, somewhere in the process, 10 chairs at a time.
Yeah.
They're $20 a piece, and we need another 150 chairs. Yeah. That's just another one of these things with people coming from all over the place. And,
right. A simple thing of hospitality to bring.
Hospitality.
And then there's the dividing wall.
That's right. There we are. This is a very interesting story. So this is the dividing wall between the old and the new. And we were in this process, and they've begun to knock the hole in the wall. And they're in this process with the contractor. And in steps, a gentleman. If you can get, that's the gentleman. A really interesting life story for you as well. I think for each one of us. You have no idea who is watching your life. Mm-hmm. Or the effect that you are having. And whether, it just doesn't matter where you are. So Mustafa, in his place, his residence is the bottom of the church, the basement of the church, so to say. This gentleman was living across the street in the second floor. And for a year and a half, he watched Mustafa and what was happening at the church. The widows would come, the orphans would come, the kids would come. Other people would come, and he comes to the door. Sometimes he prays. Sometimes he's, well, just about always, if he has any rice at all, he's always giving a few cups of rice, or something that's cooked up. And, yeah, if you hadn't given me rice this week, I would have starved. That's not an uncommon story and not an uncommon truth. Yeah. So, anyway, this guy watched this process for a year and a half. He walks into when the dividing wall is being taken down, and he says to the contractor, bypassed Mustafa, and he just says, I want to pay for taking down the wall, and I want to pay for this podium, they call it the altar. Anyway, he's standing on the step of the altar, and it's really remarkable how it was tiled and so on, but I want to pay for that. So the dividing wall went into the altar, and then it was filled in with concrete and tiled over the top. And he was watching what was happening for this period of time, and he comes in there and says that. And Mustafa goes to visit him and says, you know what? What's the story? Well, this is what happened. I watched you with the widow women. I watched you pray. I watched you give food. I watched the kids come, how you cared for them, how you invited them, how you handled them, how you touched them, how you feed them. And your precocious son brings his friends. No, if we need space, you need to build another room because you need to trust God so that this kid can be looked after in our home. That's why he's got 8 kids in his home. And his wife died, which is a whole nother story of travail and trouble and challenge. But this Peter number 2 is a real challenger of your faith. So this guy comes, and he gets prayed for too because he's got physical issues, and he gets healed.
Wow.
He's healed. So that motivates him again to see whether he can't be involved. He wound up giving it. That's this first time. He gave about $3,000, which in Africa is an enormous amount of money.
Yeah.
And for him to do that and then have an ongoing interest in helping us with some other stuff which we were going to talk about. But he's an odd-looking character, is he not? you're not sure, just maybe you need some more healing or whatever it is. But he's an answer to prayer. And most of us stood outside his door there and just wept because you have no idea. You have no idea. Live like Jesus would live. Do what Jesus would do.
Yeah.
And let your life be a demonstration of him in you.
Wow, what an encouraging moment for them and for us.
Yeah.
Here in this space. And well, as we wind down a little bit here, and we have a few more pictures to show across the screen, we're going to cruise through them a little bit. So,
okay.
So here's a little one.
There's Mustafa's household. He has two sons, and then the rest are all orphans. So you got to look after these kids. You got to clothe them, school them, do whatever you need for them. And some of them are now wanting to go to college. College is about $1,000 a year. Something like that, which is impossible.
Yeah.
Incidentally, the wage, if Mustafa was getting his full wage, he'd get about $100 a month. How are you going to live when a bag of rice is $70?
Hmm.
And you eat at least a bag of rice a month. His household needs more than a bag of rice. So for the church to look after the widows in his own household, he probably needs at least 350-kilo bags. Well, he need for a month for him, he needs at least a bag and a half or two bags for his house. And then in the church, every week, we need to have a rice distribution. And you need at least one bag a week. So either $70 a week, $100 a week, something like that, to be able to give to the widows and the orphans to kind of keep them alive. That's his household.
Great.
That's Mustafa. Jeremiah is the other church and the other pastor. That's a larger structure, and Jeremiah was responsible for being the super on the job, just like Mustafa is the super on his job. And if you're not the super and you're on it all the time, then stuff disappears, the money disappears, the materials disappear. You have to be very, very militant about that. The builders and the contractors, they joke about him and being the general. But in underneath, he's very, very serious, because you will not want to experience me if you steal from me. And Jeremiah, he's done this now. He's got a Melinda and a Peter Jesse and a Caleb. And then he's got another orphan girl that lives with him as well. And his congregation currently is about 40 or 50, something like that. He has a little bit of food distribution as well that would be so welcome, because things are very, very tough. Inflation has doubled the cost of stuff in about the last year and a half.
Yeah.
So extremely difficult to adjust to.
Yeah.
But he's built a real structure.
That's a great structure, yeah.
There was enough persecution. You know, you talk about being difficult. He's got the roof on the structure now, and he's digging holes for the outside toilets. And all of a sudden, he's attacked by three Muslim young men. And they use stones on him. And he is not, he escaped with his life. And being that he's the military guy, he doesn't really go very much for that kind of stuff. So that's some of the things that I really like. No, we're not going to be meek and mild, and we're not going to just take this without doing something to adjust it. So anyway, he goes to the police, and the police actually arrest these three guys.
Wow.
Well, then they're concerned, because those guys are in jail. And being in jail in Sierra Leone is not a fun experience.
Yeah.
If you don't have people to come and feed you, some of your family give you food, whatever, you may not get food.
Wow.
So it's a different kind of a story. So now they're beginning to plead. But behind these three guys, there was two other guys, in particular instigators against Christian practice and belief, because Sierra Leone is a high percentage of Muslims.
Yes.
And some of them quite radical. However, the guys that instigated this, very interestingly, the two guys died within 6 months. One through fights, one through another cause. But in the community, it was recognized, do not mess around with Jeremiah and with God,
wow.
with his God,
wow.
because it will not go well with you.
Wow.
And there's a recognition of the presence and power of God. Yep, they experienced the healing. Yep, they experienced the presence in the preaching and the evangelism. Evangelism is a big deal, and it happens all the time.
Yeah.
And so they are involved with that kind of thing. But Jeremiah has earned not only the respect, but the the love of the community. And the community, I didn't have pictures of it, but anyhow, the church is on a kind of an isolated piece of dirt that is across the river from the city proper. Now the community came and they started building a road with picks and shovels and getting bit by snakes and all kinds of stuff. And they needed a bridge across the river for when the river is high, because it just varies from a nice little creek kind of thing that you can wade through to a flooding river. And I didn't have finances to help. We only needed $1,500, and I couldn't see how that would really work. But they built it out of sticks.
Wow.
Now, it's something that you and I might not be that comfortable with, but it withstood the rush of the river. And so he is loved and respected in the community and continues to rise in the eyes of the community and being seen as a place of safety and of provision. So in the distribution of food as well, if it's possible to do that with some of the NGOs.
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's so wonderful to hear the work and how God is at work within the churches there. And you have a goal for this work that the goal and the work could grow to be dependent on Westerners in particular.
Yes.
But you have a goal with this. So what is your goal for the church and work in Sierra Leone?
From the beginning, my statement to them was, okay, I want to teach you how to fish. So we send you to seminary so that you are better educated to get better wages to be able to advance. And that was helpful. In this process, we've also had motorcycles to try to have taxi, because taxi, you know, everybody needs a ride. And we've tried various means of getting people so that they could fish for themselves. At this current thing, there's four different things that we are working on. One is diamond and gold mining. And this is modern technology in Sierra Leone. This is by Kenema, Bo Kenema, about a three-hour drive out of Freetown, where Mustafa is. And you dig up the stone, stone and sand, whatever there all is there, which you can see. Everything's by hand, and then you have to have a pump. I bought a pump so that they could wash it so that you can sieve out any gold and diamonds. And I don't know exactly how they recognize that, but anyhow, this is one of the things. If we actually find gold and find diamonds, this is supposed to, according to the government, be land that is rich in that. So we're doing that for a reason. The village invited Mustafa to come and supervise that, being the military pastor guy, and he would organize that and be able to handle the government stuff as well and not take any guff from anybody. But he's going to be respected, and he demands respect.
Yes.
And he's got stories.
Yes.
But anyway, this is one of the projects.
Good.
So we have another project that I don't have pictures for. He was given land. The village gave him land that's got a lot of trees on it. And in order to build the roof, if you saw those trusses and rafters in there and so on, those are all sawn with a chainsaw. So you cut the tree with the chainsaw, then you cut the boards with the chainsaw, and you cut dimensional lumber. And then when you really want to have it trimmed down, well, then you take it to a place where they kind of plane it to size. So lumber is very profitable, very profitable. And we have, in this process, Mustafa has been out there very, very often. Oh, I got to tell you, Muslim Village, they provided the lumber for free. All the cost was fuel, oil, and rice, groceries. You feed us, and we're going to provide you with the lumber for your structure, for your roof, all the wood in the church. Absolutely astonishing.
Wow, yeah.
In the meantime, he's preaching the gospel and they're establishing a church in the village. And he's welcome. And the other villages around it are inviting him, because they said, no, we aren't having this kind of support from the Muslim community.
Yes.
It's an interesting story. But anyhow, so there's the sawmill. That's what I'd like it to be. Sawmill, chainmill, sawmill. We acquired a wreck of a saw and rebuilt it, and that's what we're using now. That's our first one.
Wow.
But if we had help with that, that would be really helpful. With diamond mining as well, we need some sieves and some equipment that would be helpful there. Say if we had $5,000 for the diamond thing and the pumps and so on, that'd be very, very helpful.
for the sawing, if there was another $5,000 there to get saws and whatever kind. And if there was 10, that would be great too. It would employ people, give them a skill, and also have product to market that would support them. Thirdly is that there's an opportunity to have water bottling purification. There's another pasture there that has the same thing, and it is lucrative, and it is, again, something of those things that would be workable, and for $10,000 we could set them up to have that as an ongoing resource, and that would just be very, very helpful. There's opportunity, and most of his heart just cries out, oh man, Peter's going to get tired. You know, we need to be looking after ourselves. And he tells Jeremiah, we need to find resources. Well, for Jeremiah and his wife, they'd like to have a sewing machine. Well, it's only $300,
right?
Or whatever, you know, that we could have ongoing multiples of. But that would equip the queen, as I call the African wives there, the queen. That would equip her so that she could teach others to have a career and begin to develop their own stuff. But I'm really working on trying to motivate them. You need to think about independence.
Wow.
I am not God, and I am not your resource. Yeah. But we try to help. And I just think that it's a marvelous thing that a miracle of God and the graciousness, that's my experience with Heavenly Father. He just continues to ruin me with his graciousness and his kindness and his faithfulness. And he says, I want to look after you. I want to bless you. I've got a plan for you.
Yeah.
And that just really applies to you as much as it does to me. And for you to have become involved in my life, you have no idea. You have no idea what a wonderful thing it is, and to have met Brandon and to see the finger of God steering us along,
yeah.
And setting people free. Incidentally, there was 24 people baptized in the church in April.
Yeah.
Every month there's some more people baptized, and they come and get set free, they get delivered, can tell you stories all day long.
Yeah.
But God bless you, and I just want to declare the blessing of God over you in spirit and mind and body, that you would experience him the way that he really is. He is our loving Heavenly Father, and he wants to have an intimate relationship with you.
Amen.
So that he can empower you to work in his kingdom, be a part of his kingdom, and receive the things that are better than money, better than anything else. He is the best.
Amen.
God bless you.
God bless you. Well, Peter, we want to pray for you.
Amen.
Yeah.